Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I have you muted, not because I don't want to hear from you, but for background noise. But so here, let me give you sort of an overview of the format. This is the sixth of the five-part Supercoach Academy 2017 Preview Masterclass Series. I always liked, those of you who know, the Hitchhiker's Guide books, that one of the Hitchhiker's Guide books was in fact called the fifth in the increasingly inaptly named Hitchhiker's Guide trilogy. But we wanted to add this masterclass because practice building is, in my experience of working with coaches, one of the most misunderstood areas, one of the areas where people have the most insecure thinking, therefore one of the areas where people who like to exploit insecure thinking tend to jump in and exploit that insecure thinking. But it's also one of the areas that can become part of the joy of doing coaching as a business, part of the joy of doing this as your living and not your hobby. And so I've sort of broken the presentation down into three parts. So we're going to have, we're going to have the big question, the big mistake, and the big secret. Dun, dun, dun. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of talk through each of those three things. I'll take some questions, and then I'm going to coach a couple of people who wrote in about, you know, their practice, about who wrote in with specific questions about their practice building. And we'll use those coaching sessions. Obviously, they'll be helpful for them. But invariably, when you hear somebody else talk, you see things. And that would be the frame that I'd want to give you for our time together today, is let this be about what you see, not what I say. So that's the nature of insight anyways. Is we have an insight into what we need insight into. So you will see something for yourself about building your successful coaching practice through our time together. It may look like it relates directly to what I or somebody else says. It may look random. It may be like remembering something that you used to know but forgot. But that's the payoff. Not having more data, more information, one of the cons of practice building. One of the cons in the coaching world is information is what's missing. There is no information you need to build a coaching practice that you can't find on Google. Right? Information is not the problem. So that's a starting premise. And if at times this turns into a diatribe, I will gently slap myself in the face, back off, and apologize. I do have opinions and feelings about how this part of coaching is taught. So what's the big question? Well, the big question is, do you really want to build a successful coaching practice? And that's a funny big question, because assumedly, if you're here, you assume that you do, right? Because assumedly, if you weren't interested in pottery, you wouldn't come on a class about being good at pottery. But when I think back over the years that I have taught coaches and coached coaches and mentored coaches on building their practice, the ones that really flounder with it, often they don't really want to do it. They just want money. Right? Now, fair enough. But if you just want money, go get money. Like, this is not the easiest way to do that. I remember a woman on Supercoach Academy 2010. And I was really impressed with her. I thought she did, she picked up on things really quickly, and I thought her coaching was really elegant, and I liked her, the feeling of her, if that makes sense. I liked her presence. And I said to her, do you know, because she had no background and no experience, I said, do you know, I know you have no background and no experience, but I reckon within 18 months, you're going to be really up and running. And she looked at me in horror. She said, 18 months? I may as well get a job at the supermarket. And in my head, I was like, okay, go get a job at the supermarket then. I thought you wanted to be a coach. So it's about being honest with yourself. And so I was thinking of a metaphor for this. And the metaphor that came to me was the obvious one in some ways. We're building a house, building your dream house, right? You know, if you set out to build your dream house, it is going to take you twice as long as you think it will, and it is going to cost you at least 1.5 times as much as you think it's going to cost you, right? You know that. That's how it works. And you're in anyways because you're going to have your dream house afterwards. So when the shit hits the fan and things don't work out and things take longer than they expect and people let you down and unexpected problems turn up, you go up into your head, you get all pissy, and then you carry on building your dream house because that's what you're up to. And you really are excited about what you're building. And some days you love it and some days you hate it and it doesn't really matter to you. Well, that's the level of resolve and commitment it takes to build a successful coaching practice. Now, that makes it sound horrible, maybe. I don't know. Like you know, because some people really like building, right? It's not necessarily horrible. In fact, I'll talk about why I love it and the things about it that I love. But understand what you're up to, right? My biggest gripe about the way coaching is sold and talked about in the social media scape is that it's talked about like it's a multi-level marketing business. You know, learn to coach from home in your spare time, make cash, right? My experience is if you are looking at this as a profession, right, that would be like responding to an ad that says, learn brain surgery in your spare time, do it at home, make cash, right? You probably could do it, but that's not really being a brain surgeon. And you can get clients through tricks, right? You can get clients through following 7-step processes, but that's not a practice. That's a client. And clients come and go. That's the nature of clients. So it's a real question. Do I really want to do this? And if you do, you will. And I will support you in that. And the stuff that we talk about today will support you in that. If you don't, give yourself a break. Don't beat yourself up for why am I not following through? Oh my God, it's the self-sabotage pattern I started when I was 12. No, it's really not. You just don't want to. That's all. And that's fair enough. That really is. But I'll flip that, okay? Sometimes people think they're not up for it because they think they know what it's going to take and they don't want to do that. And I want to caution you about that as well, because you're probably wrong about what it's going to take. If you're really like, I don't know, but you suspect you really do want to, but I don't know, right? Well, what that is I'm going to have to talk to people and I'm going to have to sell and wear tacky clothes and talk fast and trick people. And I don't want to, right? No. That is not what we're talking about. So if you notice you don't have a lot of energy around it, it might be that, okay? That doesn't mean you don't want to do it. It just means you've got a really some interesting ideas about what it takes that are, in fairness to you, perpetuated by a lot of the people who talk about what it takes. So the big question, do I really want to do this? And as I say, if you do, you can. And this everything we're going to talk about for the next 90 minutes is going to support you in that. Okay. Actually, any kind of burning questions on that one before I move forward? So just Mia, let me bring you on here. I got you.
Me?
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, no, I just didn't want to be pedantic about the language, but just checking that for coach, we can also be thinking in terms of 3 principles, teacher or facilitator.
Oh my God, you can be talking about dentist.
Okay.
Like this is actually the fundamental question that isn't asked, but probably would save people a lot of time if it was asked before they start anything, is do you really want to? because it's the lack of resolve, the lack of intention that makes it feel like such hard work. And I don't know why, I just can't get myself to do it. And it's like, well, what is it that you're going to do? Hit myself in the head with a brick? I know why you don't want to do it. Ooh, call on me. It's because you don't want to do it. Right? That's all there is to it. And it's cool. Like, it's fine. It's great. I would hate anyone to feel they have to go out and build a successful business. But if you do want to, there are certain things that pretty predictably will help you and other things that pretty predictably will get in your way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks. Okay. So we've done the big question. What's the big mistake? Well, the big mistake in my experience, and this is specific to, well, I say specific to coaches, three principals, practitioners, therapists, helping professionals in general, is the confusion between marketing and selling. Right? By something that will hopefully make sense to you in a second if it doesn't already, by virtue of the nature of marketing, most people trying to help helping professionals build businesses teach them how to market. And they market the program on how to market your coaching. Right? So it's I don't know, sometimes I think it's innocent, sometimes I think it's deliberate. But marketing, and I'll make the distinction that I have between marketing and selling, and I'll talk about where I think marketing is helpful and when it's helpful. But I'll also talk about a different way of thinking about building your practice to marketing. So marketing is by design generic, right? So if you're thinking in terms of, well, what are the benefits of what I do? That's a marketing question. That's a generic answer. If you ask me, how would Mitchell's life be better because of the time we spend together? That's a sales question. Right? So we tend to ask marketing questions in our mind. We tend to look for marketing answers. Another way of thinking about it is marketing is, how do I reach more people? Selling is, who's next? Or how do I reach this person? Or how could I impact, what could I create with this person? Now, the reason that that matters, and you know, my team will laugh at me for this because we've been talking about this all week in our end of year business meetings, but it's because of a design concept called form follows function. In other words, you got to figure out what the job is to know what tool is best suited to do the job. Marketing is a tool to bring people into your world and to bring you into their awareness. So if the way to build a coaching practice was to have lots of people know who you are, then that would make a lot of sense. But people don't buy high-end services with a click here for instant access button, right? It's not that kind of thing. It's not an impulse buy. And if it is, I don't know what you're doing, right? But on the whole, you know, coaching, three principles, practicing, you know, helping, it's not priced like an impulse buy. It's not structured like an impulse buy. And hopefully you wouldn't really want it to be a complete impulse buy, because you can get some real crazies, with no offense to the crazies, but like, if you've been coaching for any length of time, you know that some of the people come to you like they're doing their best, right? Steve Chandler used to, Steve and I worked together for years, and he's coming in doing one of our business building masterclasses on the Next Academy. And I remember he had this thing that he called his no crazies policy. You know, and it was making a stand for the kind of client he wanted to work with. And after a particularly rough patch in 2011, where I had a few clients who really came for business coaching ostensibly, and that was not what they needed or wanted, I said, Steve, I think I'm going to institute a no crazies policy too. And he said, no, Michael, you can't. The crazies need you. So we each have our niche. But but within that, think about things like building a website, right? Marketing or selling. Think about things like working on your branding, marketing or selling, right? Think about things like starting a blog, marketing or selling. Now, the exception to that is if you want to start a blog because you like blogging, right? So like that's literally, it did not occur to me that my blog would be a marketing tool until about a year in when my son, who was probably 7, like I think he would have been 7 years old. We were talking one night as I was tucking him in for bed, and he said, Daddy, did you write the tip today? You know, because I wrote the tip every day, and usually after he went to bed, and I was like, he was like, actually I did. I already wrote it this morning. And he's like, oh good. And he said, how many people read it now? And I think at the end of the first year we had a couple of thousand people. And he said, Daddy, if you asked them each to pay you $1 every time you wrote a tip, you'd be rich. Now, literally, it hadn't occurred to me that there was a business model there. I just like writing shit. And in a way, it messed me up for a while because something was like about, yeah, I should be making money from this. So again, I'm making a caveat. If you love designing websites, if branding fascinates you, you of course, go do it. But understand that it's marketing, not selling. And understand that coaching practices are built through selling, not marketing. You work with an individual. So the form following function, the conversation that is going to be most useful to finding out whether this particular individual, whether you can help them and whether they want to be helped in the way you can help them, well, that's a sales conversation. Now, you can call it an enrollment conversation. I actually quite like enrollment. Right. Some people just because it's the same thing. Like I say God and then apologize because what I mean is whatever the highest spiritual totality energy of the universe is, and God just is a way for me of talking about that. And for some people, they've got so much stuff on the word that I have to kind of not use that word to talk about it. Well, I'm using selling to talk about the process of meeting somebody, spending time with them, seeing if you can help them, showing them how you can help them, them seeing how you can help them, and them hiring you to help them. Right? I'm calling that selling. If you've got a thing on that word, call it enrolling. Right? And there's actually a quote. I printed it off because I knew I would want to share this. This is from Werner Erhard, who was the founder of EST and the Forum, and I liked this quote very much. Enrollment is causing a new possibility to be present for another, so they're touched, moved, and inspired by that possibility. So I'll say it again, and maybe we can send it out. We will send it out to you guys afterwards in a follow-up email. Enrollment is causing a new possibility to be present for another, so they're touched, moved, and inspired by that possibility. That's what the sales conversation is about. That's what the enrollment conversation is about. And the other piece of it, why I said that even, so okay, let me back it up a little. Let me see if I can recap. So the big mistake, the big myth is that you can market coaching as the way that you'll build your practice. Now, what you may do through marketing is you may bring people into your world to have sales conversations, enrollment conversations with. That is true. So I'm not suggesting it cannot be useful in the process. However, I see so many new coaches spend a lot of money on marketing materials because they think that's how they will build their business. And it's a big mistake because that's not how businesses get built in this profession. in this world. You've got a lower end, higher volume, different kind of product base. It may be the perfect tool. Now, the reason that even if, so sometimes I share this with somebody, with a new coach, and they go, oh, yeah, no, that makes total sense, but I don't have anyone to talk to, so I want to spend all this time and money on marketing so that I have people to talk to enroll. So I want to make a distinction between creating and marketing. Because again, creating is something that you do one person at a time. So again, marketing is how many, how do them, you know, that group, you know, what would be useful to them? Well, creating is literally looking for, okay, who could I create a conversation with? Who in my world could I create a conversation with about possibility? And in like a conversation about possibility that might touch and move them to want to create and engage with that possibility. Well, suddenly, as with all acts of creation, once you're in that question, things start to show up in your world. Now, whether they really show up in your world magically, or whether they were always there but you didn't see them because you weren't looking, I don't know. Right? I like both explanations depending on my mood. But reliably, when you start asking that question, people come to mind, or they knock on your door, or they email you, and you go, holy shit, where did they come from? And that is reliable. I like to say in Creating the Impossible, it's 100% reliable and 98% unpredictable in terms of how it happens. And that's the thing about creating. If you are engaged in any other creative endeavor, you already know that. You don't go to the canvas and you know, expect the painting to just go, there it is. Right? You know there will be a process, a moment by moment process, and that it might not look like anything until it looks like a work of art. It'll just look like a series of brushstrokes. It'll just look like a bunch of words on a page. And then you go back, you come back to it, you shape it, you create, and suddenly, boom, there's something. There's the next conversation. There's the next possibility. There's the next human being that you could actually make a difference in their life, which is assumedly why you want to do this for a job. And if it isn't, well, okay. Right? But, you know, this might not be the conversation. I might not be the person to be in conversation with. Right? I mean, it may even be possible. In all honesty, the network marketing type coaching, I have worked with people who run those programs. I've worked with people on those programs. And it is not true that nobody succeeds with them. It is true that the number of people who actually are creating the results that they say they are is minimal. And that often includes the person running the training. And that's just my experience over 26 years working in this world. So I would feel differently about it if it actually worked. It still wouldn't be my way of doing it, but I would be less damning of it. And, you know, I often say about any program, and I think this is true too, though it's just like a rule of thumb, any program you put out there will work well enough for enough people to get testimonials to sell it to somebody else. Because sometimes it's just right thing, right time. Right? So the fact that somebody has great testimonials, great. They may even be true. And it doesn't tell you anything about the other 35 people they worked with or didn't. So before I get down too far down that hard, right, okay. Marketing versus creating and selling. Anything you want to kind of jump in with a question about with that distinction before I move on to the big secret? Going once. Going twice. Okay. So Want to know the secret of effortlessly selling this stuff? Anyone? Yeah? Great. Change people's lives. Now, that works for a number of reasons, right? It works because there's a natural marketing built in with that. Right? There's a natural referral base that comes. You know, again, it's a Steve Chandler line, but one of my favorites, he calls it Lazarus marketing. You only have to bring one person back from the dead and they'll talk about you forever, right? But it's actually, in my mind, more on the creating and selling side. Because if you know that being in conversation with you can change someone's life, it's easy to talk about. Because you're not full of shit. You're not trying to get something from them. You genuinely see a possibility for them that if they see it, they would be genuinely mad not to take it. Now, that encompasses every aspect of it, right? That will encompass your pricing, right? That will, because you want to price it in a way that to you, it seems like a pretty much a no-brainer for them. Like you should really do, you know, it would be like somebody who, if you were a plumber, okay, and you walked into somebody's kitchen and there was a slow drip and you thought, oh, I can fix that, right? And you thought, just in your head, I'm making this up as I go, so this might turn out to be a terrible example, but let's just roll with it, right? So you said, oh, I can fix that for you. Well how much? Oh, $25. Oh, okay, great. Yeah, because that thing drives me nuts. Boom, done. Now, if you went on a course that told you that you have to set a high fee, you have to respect the value of your plumbing, you have to look at the amount of money you spent in plumbing school, training to be a plumber, and you have to factor that. They need to treat you not like a plumber, but like a professional plumber. So my fee started $1,000. Well, chances are very few people are going to have you fix their little annoying drip. And chances are you will actually feel so awkward about it, you won't even bring it up. Or maybe you'll get yourself all psyched up with your coach to go out and say it. And then it'll be like, I remember one of the most awkward and kind of sweet moments. My best friend, when I lived in London, he was a good looking guy. And he liked women. And I remember we were in Covent Garden. And there were these absolutely beautiful women sitting out in Covent Garden. Out, it's an outdoor market for those of you that don't know it. And he, you know, I would never go up to somebody like that, right? I mean, but he was like, I'm going in. And he went up to one of these women and he said, I don't know what he said, to be honest, but he said something along, he asked her out. And she looked at him and went, oh, that was very brave. Right? That's how we freaking do this coaching thing. It's like, I set my fee. Oh, that was very brave. Right? You don't want to be brave. That's really not a formula for long-term success. You want to just set a fee that you kind of go, yeah, it's totally worth this. Right? And as you get more and more comfortable with the fact that you change people's lives, or more to the point, when it becomes more factual that you are changing people's lives, that number will go up. It just will, right? And one of the things people put in the way of building their practice is, I have to charge a big fee. I charged 33 quid for 2 hours for the first, I don't know, it's probably first 6 months, maybe even year of my practice, right? That's $50 for 2 hours, $25 an hour, right? But I could do that. That was a number I was comfortable with. I felt like, okay, this is worth this. So part of changing people's lives, and look, this is why I'm doing this class in service of Supercoach Academy 2017, right? Is that's the essence of building a successful practice, is having something to build that practice around. And coaching, I believe, and particularly transformative coaching, coaching with an understanding of the principles, is a whole different thing than most of what's out there in the market. But we have a funny notion about what it is that we're selling, right? We think we're selling information or ideas. Oh, they need to know the principles. Well, you can read them on Google, right? That's not, maybe they don't know to go on Google to read them, but that's not it. We're selling impact, not ideas. We're selling impact, not hours. What people want is to be impacted, is for their life to change, for them to be able to get out into the world, engage with the world in a new way and create. Or to get out of whatever funk they've been in for the last 15 years and to have a wonderful life. Or to take the relationships and people that matter most to them and be able to come back to those relationships fresh, so that they really are not just the most important relationships in their life, but the most rewarding and wonderful relationships in their life. That's what they want. That's what we can help them with, but only if we can help them with it. So it all starts with that. Are you changing people's lives? Now, I used to say, be a great coach, but that ran into everybody's psychology. Because you had a bunch of people who were really changing people's lives, but had low self-esteem or were British. And they were, oh, no, I don't do that. No, I don't know. Please, God, no. Right? And so they kind of shrunk. And then you had a bunch of people who may or may not have ever even talked to anyone, but they go, yeah, I'm a great coach. I'm fantastic. Because I have high self-esteem and a high percent. Like, no. Are you changing people's lives? And don't beat yourself up if you're not. But understand that that's the basis of your practice. If you're not changing people's lives, why should they help you build your practice? Why should they be paying you? Because you worked hard to get here, right? If there's nothing wrong with your plumbing, why would you pay a plumber? If they can't build you a better water system for your home, why would you hire them? Right? We understand that in those areas, but we somehow think that what I've done to get here is relevant in coaching. It doesn't matter what you've done to get here. What matters is, can you help me? And I'll take it a step further. It's not really even, can you help me? It's, can you show me something about me that will change my life, that will make my life easier, better, more wonderful, that will make me more present, loving, wiser, smarter, intelligent, creative? That's what is on offer. That's what we can do. And you need to be able to do it. And then selling gets easy. Right? I sometimes use the analogy of, and just do this as a thought experiment right now. Okay? And the first one is, okay, there's a room full of very kind of cool people, like the kind of people you would love to work with. And you need to go into that room and raise $1 million. You need to get them to give you $1 million between them. And just think about that, right? And, when you get the taste of vomit out of your mouth, and let's reset. Okay, same room of people, really cool people, kind of people you'd love to work with. And I give you $1 million to go into that room and give away. Okay. Now imagine those conversations. you know, what different things would come to mind? Who would you approach? How easy would the approach be? Now, again, there may still be some social awkwardness because we, most of us have some social conditioning around approaching people, but in fact, you tell me, somebody who kind of had a palpable difference between those two, raise your hand. Or you can also raise, by the way, if you hit manage participants, you can raise an imaginary hand as well. A virtual hand, it's not imaginary. But, you know. All right, Mitchell.
Okay, so on the first one, I freaked out and throat got all tight and had no idea how I would do it, and the mind went like that. And in the second case, I just saw an opportunity to step out, be at risk, share, be vulnerable, and share what I understand of these principles and of how life works, and see if I could do it in a way that made a difference for people.
Completely different feeling, completely different energy. Also completely different to the exercise I asked you to do, but I understand what you mean. Who else? Who else had an experience of that, of the difference between those things? Yeah, Mia. And then Rex, you'll be next, and then Kevin.
Yeah, I think it was a kind of a geography. In the first one, I just felt myself go right back, like against the wall, and there was a vast gulf between me and the people that I was approaching. And with the second one, I just felt myself go like right in there, because what did I have to worry about? So right. It was
That is what selling for a lot of people feels like, being put up against the wall waiting for the firing squad. And you think you're supposed to get really brave and push through it somehow, and that's selling. Well, no, selling coaching, if you're someone who changes people's lives, selling principles work, selling whatever it is that you do, is the other one. There is still a vulnerability, but it's like, wow, this would be really cool. This is a neat conversation to be in. This is an engagement with people. This isn't a firing squad. I have to tough it out, you know, put on my big girl panties, as the expression goes, and go for it. Rex.
Hi. Hey. In the first one, I had, first of all, oh shit, cool people. I'm not cool. raise a million. Well, I don't even know if they've got a million. How am I supposed to get a million out of people? I don't know what they've got. And plenty more obstacles came my way. With the second one, the first thing I thought was, do you know, I want to really know that you are going to be worth anything that I give you. I want to really know that you're really going to be there and do something that is worthwhile. And when I thought what worthwhile might mean, I thought worthwhile to them, that would actually make a difference to them. And so my criteria would be completely different.
Right. Now, no, there's something really big in that, Rex, that's so relevant to us as coaches, right? Suddenly, we're going in And we're wanting to make sure it's worth it, right? You know, those of you who've seen the movie Saving Private Ryan, you know, and there's that line near the end where Tom Hanks says to Matt Damon, you know, make this worth it. You know, go live a life that makes what we have done for you makes us feel good about having done that, right? That's a completely different place to be in this conversation from. And do they have money? Who can I get money from? They're the least scary person. Let me talk to them. Right? It's an entirely different conversation from an entirely different place. And it's a conversation that is easy for any of us to have, even if we still have a little bit of social awkwardness around it, which we just will if we do.
And that exactly example is my experience with a client where, you know, I was recommended. I went to the client. I saw the diamond in the client. I saw the huge potential for them to go and create value, but they didn't do any of the homework. You know, when I turned up, they didn't make make the time available. We saw it as it sort of happen, and now it's all gone quiet. So I've sent something that I think will serve them. But actually, this simple different way of thinking about it, I would just go in completely different, and I'd be saying to them, look, I've sent you some things and you haven't looked at it. I cannot work with you unless you actually commit to this. If you want to commit to it, then I'll do it.
Now let me make a real distinction. Thank you, Rex. Let me make a real distinction around this for everyone, because if you read books about how to sell, how to build a coaching practice, how to do this, you will hear things like avoid role reversal, make sure that the client makes a big commitment. And they're picking up on what Rex was pointing to, which is that if they're not in, it's going to be a disaster. But the difference is, in Rex's, in this example, it's not tactical. It's not a trick. It's just recognizing, hey, we are wasting our time right now. And since I only have $1 million to give away, so I don't want to waste it if you're just going to fritter the money away or not do anything with it. That's a real conversation. If that's not real, then it's just another tactic and it'll work till you catch on to yourself that you're full of shit and then you'll look for another one. But if you really see you've got something that really can change lives, then you're not going to want to waste that on people who aren't in, who don't really want to make a go of it in whatever it is that they want to make a go of it. Because it is a limited resource, your time. Now, again, here's the difference between faking it being a limited resource and it being a limited resource. When you first start out, it might not be that limited a resource. Right? When you start out, you might have a ton of time. So there's no point pretending you don't. Right? There was one guy who came on Supercoach Academy 2010, and he was so committed in the sense of willing to put himself on the line. He wanted to get it. He wanted to do it. Now, he was... Actually, in retrospect, as I've seen more about the principles, I can see, what he was shit scared. And so his way of dealing with being shit scared was to, I'll do this no matter what, right? Well, he kept trying tricks. Like, he kept reading books about, he'd heard this one trick that he thought was really cool about you pretend that your time is scarce, right? So that you're doing them a favor, squeezing them in. So he would do this on these calls. And of course, he came off as a creep. He actually wasn't. He was a really nice guy. He was actually a lovely, lovely guy. Great, great wife, great kid, great guy. But suddenly he became a slime ball when he was trying to build his practice, right? Well, what happened is it didn't work. And eventually he ran out of cash and he had to go back and take a job in what he used to do. And guess what happened? His time actually became scarce. And so on those rare occasions where he came across somebody that he realized he could help, he would say, and mean really apologetically, I've only got between this time and this time. And they go, oh my God, yes, please. And his practice built to the point where within 9 months, he got to leave the job and actually have a coaching practice. But it came from truth. It came from it being real, not from it being a stance or a thought experiment or an idea. The value of the thought experiment is in feeling the difference, not in pretending you've got $1 million to give away. Let me go to you, Kevin.
So a couple of distinctions. The first one is when it was about going in and raising money, immediately go up into my head because it's about me. It's about me getting something from someone. And when you go to give the $1 million away, and assuming it's about your coaching and it's valuable, then it's easy to do because it's not about me. And the really big one, which I'd never considered before, was that the social awkwardness is going to be there in both. Right, I get the social awkwardness about the first one. That's easy. That stopped me a bunch of times talking to people because it's like, oh, God, I really want something. and I won't open my mouth. And sometimes in the second scenario, where it's about giving my value away, I've still got stopped by social awkwardness because I expected it not to be there just because, you know, I know that I'm valuable and my work works. So that's a nice one. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. That's great. And it's a great distinction because the truth is, look, by social awkwardness, read personal thinking. I mean, that's all it is, but it's like, it's probably going to be there because we've had it all our lives. You know, once a thought gets in there, it'll keep coming back. It just doesn't have to mean anything. Yeah, right. Sorry, Kevin, I read your lips, but I actually know what you meant. Let's sneak in Brianne, and then I want to move on and actually do a little bit of coaching around this. Brianne, go for it. You're unmuted.
Hi, Michael. The first one was really interesting because I go to my previous default of like running numbers. I'm like, okay, well, how many people are in the room? So let me do the math of how much I need from each. So now I see dollar signs instead of humans. Mm. But the second one, I just laughed. I'm like, well, that would be fun. That would be interesting. So the first scenario was a problem that needed to be solved. The second one was a game that needed to be played. Yeah. And that just feels a whole lot better.
Right. And that's it. Like, we think the secret of selling is get tougher. Get better at forcing yourself to do it. And then eventually you'll get comfortable with it. Actually, it's not bothering to do it unless you really, really, really can see why somebody would want to hire you. Unless it's obvious to you what you can do to make a difference in their world. You know, I had a great image, Brianne, when you said that. I wish I was a more of a cartoonist because it was two cocktail parties. So like in the first one, it was literally like a New Yorker cartoon of a cocktail party, but everybody's head was replaced with dollar signs, pound signs. And then in the other picture, instead of their heads, what would be in that space was the possibilities of what they might create in their world. Mm. The love, the relationships, the impact, the businesses, just the contributions. And it is, you're looking at the same cocktail party and you're seeing absolutely different things. Mm. Very cool. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I went through and read, thank you for those of you who submitted stuff about coaching. And I'd like to start, if it would be okay with you, Joanna. So by the way, if you're doing this live and you haven't figured it out, speaker view is good for this. Because you'll see, wrong person, but you'll see, it'll just be easier to watch rather than gallery view. Gallery view, I think, is good for the discussions. But so, Joe, why don't we start here? What do you think is the biggest obstacle to you building your successful coaching practice, given everything you knew coming on to the call today and what we've talked about so far?
I think the biggest hurdle for me it's just that I've never formally done this before. I mean, I've never coached anybody mm-hmm. at all.
Okay. Now, if you were going out and trying to convince people that you were awesome at something that you'd never done, it makes sense that that would feel weird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if I instead tasked you with finding somebody that you thought, given what you understand about the principles, given what you understand about human beings, that you thought you might be able to help, and you said to them, "Hey, I've never done this before, but I think I can help. Would you like to have a conversation? You know, worst case, I'm buying the coffee." Does that feel like a difficult conversation?
No, not particularly.
Yeah, not particularly, which is back to what Kevin said is we got our thinking. Right. See, that's a huge part of where I think people get themselves into trouble is they get out ahead of themselves. They think they've got to front it.
Okay.
As opposed to build it.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, like, I spent the first 2 years that I was coaching, like I said, I charged £33 for 2 hours, but I would meet almost anybody for coffee. And sometimes we'd have coffee for 2 hours, and sometimes I'd wind up paying for the coffee just to get a chance to try it. And my wife used to really, not always, but she would kind of like, oh God, when are you going to start charging? And it was like, I would feel bad because I was supposed to, but there was a part of me that just knew that's where I was. And then there came a point where it just was the most obvious thing in the world when somebody said, hey, can we meet for coffee? I was like, no, but if you want coaching, this is what it costs. And it wasn't this big forced thing. It wasn't this horrible thing. It was just actually, it was actually completely natural because I could see it. So that, does that make sense? Just that willingness.
Yes, it makes sense. And whilst it's daunting, I can see lots of opportunity. And a lot of people have already said, you know, I'd love you to come and chat or to try and help. So it's just getting started, really.
And by getting started, you mean saying yes instead of no?
Yes. But I have signed on to do the Super Coach course. So I think that'll help a lot as well.
Yeah. Now, why do you think it'll help?
I think it'll just give me confidence and back up what I'm actually doing when I'm talking to people.
Now, I think that is true, by the way, that you'll find that as you do the program. I think where it'll really help is you will start to see different things when you walk into the cocktail party above people's heads. You will start to see what's possible for them. You will start to know where to look for what's in their way. And so it will become obvious to you in the same way as the plumber walks in and the first thing he hears is the leaking faucet. Right? As you start to see this more clearly, you'll see the opportunity everywhere. Because you'll see what people want but can't quite get to, and where people get in their own way, and how they can stop.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what would be, if we were going to create your dream coaching practice, knowing that we're just playing, right? So this could completely change. What? Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
Well, I've kind of got this thing about, I think there are a lot of women who are kind of, they have kids and then they get stuck and they've either worked part-time or they've given up work. And I think there's a lot of people that want help and guidance and coaching to get, you know, to work out what they want to do next and how they could do it.
Okay. So that's assumedly who you're drawn to work with. Is that the sort of?
Yeah, at the moment.
Okay, great. And how many of them, how many of them would you want to work with in your ideal practice? Like, what would be, you know, would you have 10 clients a day? Would you have one client a month? Like what would be the pace that right now, from here, knowing it'll change?
Yeah.
But from here, you'd be like, oh, that'd be cool.
Probably a couple of people a day.
Okay. And would you work mostly by phone or Skype or face-to-face?
Very flexible, happy to do anything, but I think I'd prefer face-to-face to start with.
Right. Okay. So again, we're talking about your ideal practice, right?
Okay.
So let's make it ideal. Let reality come in later when reality comes in.
Okay.
This is your ideal practice. Okay. So you've got a couple of clients today, face-to-face. Are they at the house? Do you have an office? Do you mean?
Well, not really, but I have a room. Yeah. Sitting room.
Great. And is that where your ideal practice would be, in your sitting room?
No, I've got an ideal. But it's probably a couple of years down the line.
Right. So now what, for those of you following along at home, what Joanna's doing is what all clients do, which is not answer the question. Right? And it's because we have a high degree of reasonableness as human beings. We're kind of rewarded for being reasonable human beings, but it's kind of the death knell to creativity, our reasonableness. We as actors, we used to call it fear masquerading as good taste. Right? In your ideal, whether or not it would ever happen, whether it would happen 7 years from now or 7 minutes from now, tell me about your ideal coaching practice.
In terms of where I would coach?
Sure, let's start there.
Okay, so I want to convert the garage and make that into my coaching office.
Great.
It's in the garden, lots of glass.
Okay. Right, and who's it? Give me a person, and it's okay if it's somebody I've heard of, somebody I've never heard of, but give me a particular person who would be like, you know, maybe even two or three people who'd be like, wow, I would love to coach them.
So I know somebody who wants to change jobs.
Okay, what's their name?
Lorna.
Okay, and so Lorna. Okay, yeah. And what is it about Lorna?
She's very bright, girly, got lots to offer, but stuck in the work that she's doing, not really enjoying it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what do you think working with you could do for her?
To help her step back and see what she has to offer and work out what she really wants to do.
Okay, and just imagine her for a minute unleashed. Right? What would that look like? Saw what she had to offer.
She's a hugely creative person. She's got so much to offer.
Right.
Quite wacky individual.
Yeah. Now can you see, those of you watching, like the twinkle just came into Joanna's eyes for a minute for the first time there. Okay? And it's because we're talking about what you really want to see. We're talking about genuine possibility, unfiltered by all your personal thinking about what's possible. And so it lets our natural enthusiasm, creativity start to bubble up. This is a very easy game when you're bubbling. And it's a very difficult game when you're trying to do it reasonably in your head. Okay? So give me the next one. Who's the next ideal client?
Actually, it's my sister who's going through a very difficult divorce, and it's trying to get her to see that she doesn't have to do everything by herself.
Okay. And if she got that, like if she really saw what you would love her to see, how would that change her life?
Oh, hugely. She'd start enjoying life again rather than talking about driving into trees, which she wouldn't do, but she feels that low. That,
so tell me more. So tell me more about how life would be for her after she saw that.
She would enjoy life. She'd enjoy spending time with the children rather than seeing them as a chore. She would feel free.
Cool. And is that something you'd love for her?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. See, now we're getting towards that, oh my God, this is what's at stake here. This is what's on offer. Like that's a very different conversation than the marketing one, which is women who are blah, 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 blah.
That's because I'm a marketeer. You
see, absolutely. No, I get it. And that's why it's worth bringing up.
Yeah.
Because that's the habit. That's the habit almost all of us are in. Give me a third one just for fun.
Okay, so third one is a lady called Kizzy who has dabbled in a bit of work over the time that she's had children. Done a bit of bookkeeping, not formally trained, does a bit of acting. But she's kind of stuck in a rut. She's very low.
Right.
She has the occasional peak, but mainly she's just going along the bottom.
Okay. And if you could wave a magic wand for her, what would you wave the magic wand for?
To help her find her... purpose is probably the wrong word, but to be more fulfilled.
Okay. Now, for you, where does it look like fulfillment comes from?
For me or for her?
For human beings. Or is that, in fairness to you, if it does look like it's different for different people, then tell me for her.
It's happiness, isn't it? It's enjoyment of life. It's being comfortable with yourself so that you can then enjoy life. And I don't think she's very comfortable or happy with herself.
Okay. So, and you know, I know you're coming on the Academy, but if I were to ask you about how the principles relate to somebody finding that inner joy, that inner happiness, what would you say?
I think she needs to let go. I think she's trying too hard. She's trying to...
Okay, so that's an answer to a different question.
Okay.
About what she needs to do. I'm asking, what do the principles, what does your understanding, even if it's a little abstract, of the nature of this deeper intelligence we're calling mind, this deeper capacity we're calling consciousness, this creative force we're calling thought, what does that suggest about where somebody's happiness and well-being comes from?
It's from inside. Okay. You know, at the moment she's looking outside for all the answers rather than looking inside.
Right. So if she woke up to that, like for reals.
Yeah.
Right. and it lit her up from within. How would her life change being lit from within?
Oh, it'd be incredible. And it would be so lovely to see.
Right. Okay.
So lovely.
This Joanna is the one who should be in conversation with her about it. Right? Because this one is alive with the possibility, and that will be communicated. Now, as you go through the Academy, as you see even more about how it works, where it comes from, what gets in the way, it becomes even easier to get here in you. But there's no point in Joanna, who is trying to get coaching clients, having a conversation with her.
Yeah.
But Joanna, who sees her possibility, oh my God, if nothing else, you know, she'll think, my God, nut job, but so sweet. God, I felt cared for. Like, that's the worst case. You know, best case, she's like, I want to see that for me. Like, really? Can you really help me with that? And now you're in the conversation. So, anything you want to, just as a way of bringing this mini, mini session to a close, anything that you want to ask me about building your practice at this point?
I think I've started, you know, I can see and I've seen a difference in me knowing that it's got to come from the inside out. And people have seen a difference in me. So it, for me, it's just... it's learning to show that or to yes, it's trying to get that out. And, you know, you've managed to do it there.
Yeah.
So it's for that, it's getting comfortable with that so that it's more natural.
Yeah.
Or I show it more.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and the beautiful thing, like the good news, and now the good news, it already is natural. It's just not yet your norm.
Right. Okay.
Cool. Thank you, Jo.
Very good.
So anybody, let me make a couple of comments, and then anybody who's got any questions about that, then I'm going to do one more, and then I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Academy, and then I'm going to give you one last secret. Dun, dun, dun. But anything, so here's what I saw in talking to Joe there, is I saw what I see so often, which is somebody trying to do what they think they should do. Right? Oh, okay, yes, I want to work with these kinds of people. And well, okay, it would. And then bit by bit, she got online, right? It was like the system came online. You could almost hear the hum as the engines, you know, as it started up. And there she was. There's the smile. There's the twinkle. There's the aliveness. There's the creativity. That is how you create clients, as opposed to market to them. right? We created three clients for Joe in 10 minutes. Now, the next step will be for her to have an enrollment conversation with them, to approach them, to sell. But that's why marketing isn't necessarily even the best way to get into the conversation. Because the three women that Joe created there, the possibility of what they are, that's an easy conversation given whatever social awkward thinking you've got and blah, 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 right? But that's a pretty easy conversation to get in because she can already see what's possible for them. She's already got the $1 million to give them going into that conversation. She's not going in as a beggar. She's not going in as a supplicant. She's not going in, oh God, I don't know. She's going in going, look, genuinely, we don't know whether or not they'll be interested. But boy, they'd be slightly nuts not to be. And that's a great place to start from, right? Not everyone's going to take your $1 million. But they'd be slightly nuts not to. And that's a pretty good place to start from. So anything that came up for you in watching that before we move to the next one? Again, you can raise a hand physically or virtually. Well, actually, Rex, I'm going to hold you because you're going to be my next coaching client. So I'll come to you and I'll deal with you later. Okay, going once, questions? Going twice. Oh, Sue. Hey, Sue.
Hi. Alan actually put his hand up before me, but I don't think you saw that. So I'm happy to go. Yeah, I have a question. Joanna touched on it there. So the difference between marketing, what's coming up for me is I did a marketing course before I'd ever done any coaching. And the marketing course is everything that you've been talking about. And at a certain moment, I thought, I'm not doing this. I feel so far away from coaching. I'm just going to forget everything that I've learned and I'm going to do what I feel like I want to do. And I've now got my first clients and I'm not worrying about the money side of things. And in terms of, I'm not kind of getting into the conversation of what should I be charging them and all that kind of stuff. But the question that I still have that I haven't yet resolved is, through the marketing, I had kind of defined an ideal client that I wanted to work with. And I still feel very drawn to this kind of client, this kind of woman. But the more I'm doing the inside out coaching with friends, with family, and with my few clients, the more I'm realizing that it doesn't really matter where people come from, because actually, ultimately, underneath, we're really speaking to them as human beings and we're finding out what is blocking them from them seeing their possibilities that touch, move, and inspire them. And it really doesn't matter what kind of category we're trying to speak to, what kind of group it is. So that I'm left with thinking, I don't know whether I'm right to feel that my practice will grow in this sort of organic step-by-step way, or whether and it doesn't really matter who I'm speaking to, because I'm hoping to, I hope that they will have some benefit. Well, they are so far. And that I don't really figure out this question as to whether I should still be trying to get clients in business environments or blah, 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 blah.
Right, so great. So let me absolutely jump in on that, because and I'm going to mute you because there's an echo, at least in my ears. But that's the essence of the marketing versus creating question. Because from a marketing point of view, well, yeah, you need to know your target audience and you need to know this and you need to get this data, and then you can collect data on them and you can find out what their needs are and you can, orient your marketing towards their needs and blah, blah, blah. And then you niche and then you, well, see, with the principles, with this understanding, our niche is human beings, right? George Prensky's, dear friend and mentor, one of my favorite things I heard him say about it is he was in a company and they said, well, can you help us? And he said, oh, absolutely. And then he thought for a minute and he said, I mean, unless your company is entirely staffed by squirrels. Right? It's just like, no, this is a human being conversation. We all have this creative force in us. So where niching starts to make sense is if you are so booked up, if you have so many people approaching you for coaching, you might want to niche down so that you have a filtering system in place, so that you're not overwhelmed by inquiries. But unless you're overwhelmed by inquiries, or the other reason that niching might make sense, if you genuinely just have such a love and passion for a particular group, well, cool, great, that's a good reason to do it. But the idea that niching is necessary for building your practice does not, in my mind, stand up to or experience stand up to scrutiny. Thank you, Sue. Let me go ahead and bring Rex on, because I do want to make sure I've got some time for us to have a bit of a chat. So, Rex, what would you say is the biggest obstacle that you were up against in building your coaching practice?
Honestly speaking, it's probably me. My experience is that I am very dedicated, very very determined, hugely enthusiastic in desire to build this as a coaching practice, and yet my growth in business terms is glacial. So I sign very few clients. Those who I sign in the main tend to go really well. I've just had one that hasn't. And I've just come away from a conversation with a client which has just been absolutely extraordinary, very much in a creative space, built very much on the creativity weekend that I did with you. And I sort of lurch along right at the bottom of my financial resources, and hadn't thought about the client creation story just as we have done with Joanne. And thank you so much for that, Joanna, I should say. Thank you so much for that. And so I'm sort of at a loss as to where I go next to go and create extraordinary change for people, which when I'm in the conversations which are in the right space are just amazing. And to create a...
Tell me about what you would call your biggest success story, most dramatic transformation, most dramatic impact that you've had with a client.
I spoke with a client who was really struggling with her work, with her family situation. Everybody was expecting things of her. She couldn't find herself within that. And we spent a lot of time on what was important to her, what was right to her, and how she could be in a place of herself and make effective choices. And it absolutely transformed her life from being in tears every day to be a place where she really, she was able to face the very difficult circumstances, put the decisions in the place where they should be and responsibilities where they should be. Enjoy her summer with her children and with her family, and then actually at Thanksgiving took a time out to send me a note to say how much it had transformed her life.
Okay, and what do you think it was, like what happened that transformation happened? What happened behind the scenes under the hood?
We would talk. Each time we talked, she would say something that would just hit me, and I would ask about that, and that would lead to a revelation, to a difference for her, where she was in a completely different place. Much calmer, she could breathe easily, and she knew who she was within that.
Okay. Let me ask you a different question. If I put you on salary as a coach in my firm, right? So in other words, I'm just paying you a wage. We'll agree a wage that we both think is fair. So you're good with it, I'm good with it, right? And your job is to go out, find people to coach and change their lives. So you don't have to build them. Like that's all on me.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so how do you go about it? How would you go about finding your first client?
I don't have an answer for you.
Well, you know, I'm going to say you might want to give it more than 1.5 seconds to see if the creative intelligence of the entire universe can come through you.
Okay, sorry, I'm under time pressure. I put myself under time pressure.
And by the way,
we've got to move on. We've got to finish.
This is what our clients do. This is what we do, right? We don't give ourselves space for the creative intelligence of the entire universe to inform us. And we wonder why it's hard, right? Now, you don't have to give usually that long, but 1.5 seconds felt a little tight.
Okay, there's me trying to be helpful. What I find is I sit with it and names of people that I know pop.
No, Rex, that's in the abstract. That's a marketing conversation. I've hired you.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm going to take care of your money and I'm going to take care of their money. All you've got to do is find somebody who you can really help and approach them.
I want to talk to people who wanted to be in touch with themselves, who felt a disconnect between the way they are and the way they want to be.
Okay. Now, do you know somebody like that? See, again, I'm trying to get Rex from marketing mindset to creating mindset.
I'm trying not to give the 1.5 second answer, which is very similar to the one I gave you before. The people that I'm talking to, who I work with and work with well, fit into that.
So give me a name.
Ian.
Okay. Tell me about Ian.
He's the most charming, wonderful guy who has, at the age of 60, stopped being a financial director of a major company. Wants to do other things and continue to plow back into or bring back into society his skills and capabilities. He does actually need to continue to earn. He, when we speak, he talks for an hour about beautiful things that he's creating. And each time that happens, that stimulates something in me, and I make a suggestion or make a observation that is immensely valuable to him.
Okay, and if he worked with you as his coach, and again, like I said, I'm going to take care of all the business side of it, but if he worked with you as his coach, what more could you bring out in him, from him? How might you go even further with that with him?
I help him to find fulfillment in everything that he does, in the way that he lives his life and the way he engages with his family and with his self, and the way he looks after himself to the degree that he looks after other people.
Okay. And if he got everything that was on offer and it really worked, like it was like, ooh, that one worked, right? You know, if he really popped in the way that people sometimes can. What do you think when we did our exit interview with him, when I contact him and say, hey, what was the best thing that you got from your time working with Rex? What do you think he'll tell me?
He would tell you about a sense of completeness he had right. with his life.
Okay.
And with what he'd done and how he'd lived it.
Okay. So can you feel how a conversation could be created with him from this place? If it wasn't about the money. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So the reason, and again, yes, now is where I'll put the time thing on and go, okay, we're going to have to stop it there, but I'll talk about it a little bit. Okay, so thank you. And the reason that I went there with Rex is, and it was just a gut thing, and maybe it's wrong, and if I had longer, I would take more time to check it out. It sounded like the money was a thing. And sometimes we have a thought that gets in the way of our creating. So I was just doing what occurred to me to do to make that thought unimportant for a little while so we could create a client. Right? And you'll bump into your own thinking that gets in the way of you just actually taking the time, even when you're really busy, even when the other guy's really busy, even when, yeah, but the money, right? Of just getting underneath that, getting 1 inch beyond that noise to the space where creativity lives, to the space where fresh thinking comes, to the very space that, in fact, you're going to want to bring your clients to and get them really familiar with, the space of creation, the space within. So on the Academy, my intention, the reason that I'm doing the Academy the way I'm doing it this time, is because, and I've been complicit in this, but so much principles teaching is coming at it from a therapy model. Even when it's not blatantly therapeutic, it's either a therapy model or a teaching model. It's either saying, hey, and that's because, look, it's innocent. It's because George was a therapist. Right? That's how he sees the world. So when he started bringing Sid's message into form, it came out in therapeutic form. Roger was a teacher, right? So it came out as a teaching, and we've kind of learned through those lineages, and we've inherent in the principles, in the baby of the principles is the bathwater of the form that we're supposed to deliver them in. And in my mind, coaching is a beautiful form for the principles to be seen through. And the principles are the most solid foundation I have come across in 26 years of coaching to coach from. And so that is what this 6-month adventure is about. It is about learning to coach to bring out the potential, to awaken the possibility, to awaken the spark, to enliven human beings, to remind them of who and what they are really made of. And to make your living doing that, not from zero to a million in the 6 months of the Academy, not going to happen, but sustainably over time, such that if you want to make this at the heart of what you do for a living, at the heart of how you spend your time, you really can. And, you know, if you go back, if you haven't listened to the other masterclasses, you'll hear more of that. But if that sparks something in you, please reach out to us. Find out how we make this happen. And if it doesn't, cool. I hope you really enjoyed the last 87 minutes. Like, and that brings me to the last secret, okay? And I call it selling to Oliver. And you're going to have to fill in the blanks. Oliver is my son. He's 22. I adore him, as you'd hope most fathers would adore their children. if I was selling to Oliver, I would only want to sell him what I genuinely thought would make his life better. I would not want to convince him to do something because I needed his money. He's Oliver, right? I would not want to close him. I would not want to trick him into working with me. I would not want to seduce him into doing something that he didn't really want to do. I would not want to talk him into or out of anything unless I really saw it. If I really, really saw it, I would be willing to push him. And I would push him because I love him and because I see something that he doesn't see. And that takes away whoever your Oliver is, whoever the person is that you genuinely want the best for, that you expect to be in relationship with for the rest of your life, that you love and respect and just, God, it would bring your heart to life if they could see this. You want to sell to them. You want to find that person in every person you talk to. And if you catch yourself getting clever and getting bullshitty and getting hypey and getting marketing-y, you wouldn't do that with Oliver, with your Oliver. So don't do it with another human being. Thus endeth the sermon. So I'm going to see if there is a way that I can unmute you all. I'm not sure if that's actually possible. Lynn, is that something you can do? Done. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was great.
Thank you.